So the question is, based upon this Rambam, in the last Rambam, Pirshon Shnayis on Masechta Makos. So the Rambam says, the Mishnah says that God wants to be Mizakeh Kal Yisrael, to give us merit, and therefore he made to give us many, many mitzvahs. Right? So the question is, what do you have to give us many mitzvahs to give Mizakeh? How many mitzvahs do you need? So the Rambam says is that if you do a mitzvah and it's not totally lishma, if there's any ulterior motive, so then you don't get olam from that mitzvah. It doesn't benefit you in a way that gives you olam. It's only from lishma. And if there's any ulterior motive, then you don't get olam from it. And his example, he says, some amora or something asked, do I have olam? He says, oh yeah, one time I gave money to an ani and it was totally lishma, and therefore I do. And he says, since that's so rare, God gave us many, 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 many mitzvahs, so this way, once in a while, at least once in a lifetime, we'll get that. But the problem is why should that be? Like, what is it hurting me? Let's say I would do it if it was total lishma. I would do it without any of these other motivations. It just happens to be. There are these other things. What do you want me to do? Right? Like, that's not my fault. Like, I give tzedakah even if there weren't any of these lishma things. But now it turns out because I need actually the situation where there are none of those other things in order to get the thing. I mean, these are more. Well, they wouldn't do it if there was no lishma. And why is it that it sounds like he's saying that even if you would do it without it, you need to actually have that thing in order to get the real benefit?
He says even if you...
Yeah.
I think so. It really is lishma because there are other factors involved.
Yes. I'll read it inside, but yes. That's my understanding of it, yes.
The answer can't be that you want to do the mitzvah.
Because what?
You want to do the mitzvah.
You want
to do the mitzvah.
You want to do it.
Yes.
Well, you want to do it, but if you have other reasons why you want to do it, besides for because it's true, or because you want to do it because you want to feel like you're a guy, or because I'm a something like that, so then also you're not going to get along before it.
What if it's like just because you want to do it?
That's like, I guess that would be the same.
Right.
Yeah, but like most of the time you have other ulterior motives in it besides for that. Because you want to feel good, you want to feel different emotions. So you're saying if there's mixed, via mixed emotions, then you don't get along before. Like I hear saying, if you do a mitzvah totally lo lishma, so then you don't get any benefit, that's not really the benefit. The real benefit of mitzvahs is to do it not because you want people to look at you in some sort of way, because you do them because they're true, because they're real, because they're God's word, something like that. But now he's saying is, even if I do it for both, you don't get the benefit. I'll read it to you.
Is he holding that the whole purpose of mitzvahs, I mean, I don't know if this is weird if I say he's holding, but is the whole purpose of mitzvah for Olam Haba? Is that, I guess, the idea?
I guess, I don't know if he's going to say that, but the mitzvahs are to help benefit a person, to help you as a vehicle to bring you closer to God, which ultimately...
So he's not necessarily saying it's not helping you, but he's saying you just don't get this thing of Olam Haba.
Well, I don't know. I think Olam Haba is the degree that it helps you. I mean, I think Olam Haba is just a measured way of saying it doesn't really benefit you. The real benefit of mitzvah. I mean, it benefits you of like Toshul Shema Balashma, but I think he's saying the real benefit of mitzvahs, Olam Haba is like a measure of whether you're really getting the real benefit. It's not just like so you get the points or something, you know? Misildas ha'emuna b'Torah, she'em kiyem ha'adam mitzvahs, mishlosh esrei v'sheish mitzvahs, kiro'o yukhogan, as he's so to the Torah. The person fulfills one of the mitzvahs properly. V'lo shitev ima matara mimataras olam hazeh klal. And he doesn't have a shutfas. He doesn't join together with it. Any of the goals of this world. Right? None. No shitef imo klal. Ela asa lishma me'ava. Okay? Yeah. Sounds pretty exclusive.
This seems to make mitzvahs like Oneg extremely difficult.
Mitzvahs
like,
what?
Who wouldn't want to Oneg Shabbos?
Yeah.
Like,
right,
who,
I know.
Like,
I know.
Like, so oh, yeah, you want to do an example, but like,
yeah, right.
Come
yeah.
on, you also want to do other
right.
stuff. You don't
right.
want to
right. right. He says, L'chein amar, let me just finish up, but you're right. I don't know if I'm going to keep reading. Mach mitzvos, because the many mitzvos, Iyav sheshol yadza l'machas, b'chol yimechayev, b'shlemos. So it's therefore, it's impossible. In his whole life, he's not going to do something b'shlemos. V'yizkel ha'shon sa'nefesh, b'oso ha'maisa. And he'll be zochet olam haba with that maisa. V'mimashim what I saw is, and the proof of this, he said, Sha'altos Rabbi Chanina ben Taradion, ma'ani l'chel haba. And the person who answered him, did you ever do a maisa? the low mind, is that a mitzvah koroi? Did you ever have a proper mitzvah? On a low, kishin is nominal mitzvah staka, betachos hashlem was efsharis. Zechel v'lacham haba. You did the mitzvah staka in a perfect way. Right? Fine. You better get from the pasuk. Hashem chafetz a tzadik es yisrael, l'man kein yagil tov yadi. That's what it means. Hashem chafetz man tzidko. Hashem wants to give tzedek to be not to call Yisrael, therefore here Yagil Torah Yadir, he made the Torah very good, very big. Right? But he's saying is, right? I mean, I think he's saying it pretty clearly. He says, if you do a mitzvah, the low shitate imo, your Torah's klal, you don't join any goal at all. So what would be the big deal if you join the goal to it? You're doing it for a good reason, and you're really motivated intrinsically by the real thing. So now what? You can't get the Olam Haba, and you can't get the real Sar, because unless it's only, and it's so rare, it just sounds like, something sounds funny about it. Right? So, I mean, Zimmer developed the whole shiur on a different point, but he took this as a given. Right? But he mentioned to me that, you know, they didn't really address why this they just took it as a starting point. So, he recommended maybe with this.
That you have to have only one.
Yeah.
So that you have to have done no other thing?
Yeah, in order for the Olam Haba. Yeah, why should that be? It doesn't seem like garbage?
No, I was thinking that. Yeah.
No. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it should be such a strict, rigorous standard. Why should that be? I understand. See, I would have thought he'd say, if you do a mitzvah, lo lishma, you don't get any benefits, any Olam Haba. That's the normal thing that you learn, you know. You're first learning about yeshiva and about Torah and whatever, you realize, okay, I'm doing this totally because I want people to look at me, whatever. Okay, you can stomach that. You know? But now you tell me is I do become Lishma and I do love Torah and I do love the truth of the Torah and all that and I rise to that level. But now what? Now I have to also remove, like what? Now what? And this is where Zimmer's point is, you can't remove your little Lishma. So that's what he was saying. It's like, it's not a method to try to remove your little Lishma. It's like, yeah, to not enjoy it on Shabbos, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to move with that? It's certainly what I'm supposed to do. So that's just, there's nothing you're supposed to do. That's why God gave you total many mitzvahs. Because I'll recommend, no, a person should always do a little Shema. All in the outside of the Torah, Shema, should do Shema, Baal Shema. You should, don't not do, you know. The method was not to remove the little Shema, it's to keep doing mitzvahs and to, you know, involve yourself in them. And eventually the probabilities are such that you'll get it. But it's funny. It's funny. It just says, it seems like, come on. So I think Zimmer asked Rabbi if he ever heard anyone say this before, anyone else say this, or the Rambam anywhere else say this, or anyone else say it or argue with it. But he didn't know anything. And he said it was interesting, Rambam. I don't know if he knew it offhand, but sound, you know. But he but he didn't know of anyone who argued on it. And what I'm saying is like you saw those Amuna or whatever. You know, you think someone would say something against it for it, you know. I don't think Ram says it anywhere else either.
And also, it sounds like from the way that the Rambam describes the soul, it doesn't really have to do with it. So it just seems like if you learn and you have ideas,
right,
and your soul lives on. And,
right.
And also, I don't know where I've heard this before, but I thought that if we just are good with the Ikarim, then we get Olam Haba. Like, we can
right.
Do it Olam Haba.
Right.
And also, like, how the Abbas do it? Didn't have any mitzvahs, yeah?
Right. I don't know if he's saying this is the only way to get Olam Haba. I think he's just saying, insofar as you want the mitzvahs to give you Olam Haba, then this is the way that it works.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's saying that there's no other route. I don't know. But it could be the Avos also, they did a Lishma. Whatever they were doing, they did Lishma, they didn't do it for other reasons.
Oh,
the Avos did it because they wanted people to come on their team or whatever, then, you know,
right.
Be the same thing. Doesn't have to be mitzvahs per se, it could be learning also.
Right.
Learning or Ikarim, if you're doing that for some other reason, I don't know, maybe some same kind of thing.
Well, you'd say if anything, even by the Ikarim.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Maybe this is generalizable, you know.
Right, yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, so why should this be? Alright? So, I have an idea, I guess. I was thinking that. Does someone want to. Do you guys want to think about it? Or does someone want
to? Yeah.
Yeah.
To answer the question from before about like even though you would do it,
yeah,
it seems to be like it's not like it's using this as like a Gilan Milsa that like you really were on a level that you do Torah and Mitzvah Dol Lishma, because then it should be like even if you didn't have these Dol Lishma motivations,
right,
then, like, it shouldn't matter.
Right.
That's all I really have.
So it's not that.
Right. It's like indicative of a level.
Right.
Like
because then, right, then you don't need this. Right.
It's not
exactly.
Like, it's
right.
Like if you did it total one that's a total Nishma, then it shows that you're on right. A level where you're like
right.
Zoka Hachayim Lubas.
Right.
It's not that.
Because then
God can do a Cheshbon and figure
yeah.
out if you would have done it if, like,
correct.
That situation
you're right.
even had an erosion.
Right.
Here, like,
you're right. It doesn't sound like you're saying that. It
right.
sounds like it has to really be this way, not just
right.
Gila Milsa. That's
right.
The problem. I could have understood Gila Milsa, but it doesn't
right.
sound like
it's
you're
not,
saying that. No. I know,
some
that's
kind
the
of
problem.
Experience, it seems like. Experience of the
Rupi. Something like that.
Shema,
yeah, right.
That, like,
right. You need that.
Back
right.
Second,
yep.
Yeah.
You.
So I was thinking maybe because the whole idea of mitzvah is to understand that that even though you don't seem to be getting the reward,
okay.
right? Like the whole reward might be that you're getting the next Olam Haba. So you're not necessarily, like the whole idea is that you're not going to see the mitzvah, you might not see the mitzvah immediately, but it's there, it's counting towards your mitzvah counter. So now, by you saying, I want people to notice it, I want the reward right now, you seem to be going against the whole idea of a mitzvah. So maybe he's like saying it's not really, you know, it's
no, but let's say like a mitzvah has some other benefit, like maybe not because I want other people to do it, but let's say I own a Shabbos or something like that. So like I also enjoy it. You know, what do you want me to do? I enjoy the steak. I want to have the nice steak on Shabbos, and I happen to also enjoy
that
it.
That is the whole mitzvah, so you could enjoy it, I would assume. I would assume owning Shabbos, you're able to enjoy
well,
it.
But I also enjoy, like, I enjoy it because I enjoy Shabbos, and it brings me to ideas of God.
I'm not saying you can't enjoy it.
Well, it depends. Like, let's say my title. Like, I really have, like, a title enjoyment of it, besides for the true underlying motivation or whatever that is. Like, I also just have, like, enjoy it. Like, I enjoy these meat on the Thursday.
Okay, so I would say you're right.
Isn't that a little shmam? Also motivated and driven to it also by Taiva. But I also would do it anyways. I mean, what do you want me to do? I have Taivas, I'm a person, and I also does have desires. So why does that contradict the fact that...
Oh, I didn't... Right. That seems... I didn't realize that if you want to do the thing, that's considered lishma.
Yeah, if you want it because of, like, a Taiva reason. Like, it has to be like the idea of the Shema means you're doing it because it's true, because it relates you to God, you know, something like that. But if you're doing it because you want, your belly is hungry and you want food and it makes you feel good and tingly when you eat a thing, that's not the Shema, that's a little Shema thing. You know, where I feel like a good person when I do it. I'm not doing it because I want to show people something. I mean, whatever, I get to, look, I'm a complex person and I have a lot of different instincts and emotions and most things that you do are multi-determined, then, you know.
Isn't the whole idea of a mitzvah to live the best life? So then how can you say you're living the best life, but you don't feel good about it? Like, I don't get that.
I guess.
Like, it seems like you, or maybe, like, only when you're not doing the mitzvahs you feel best about it?
Well, I guess, like, there's a difference of, like, the good life because it's true. And that's like, because you're in line with truth, and that's like the ultimate best life of Torah, is that you're involved in a life of truth and reality and knowledge. And then there's like peripheral benefits. Like I don't know, maybe I enjoy something physically, or I enjoy psychologically, that people look at me a certain way, or when I get, yeah, like that cover, some sort of things like that, you know, which are not truly because of like my mind. But are like just the same as any of the next guy who's not perfected. It's just like I have instincts.
Seems like.
at least the way I thought about it was that you don't have like that great of sharing all hava. Like, you know, the more you develop, the more perfect you are, the more shareable hava you get, and that's it. But this way seems like an all or nothing.
I know. And it's weird. I know. Weird. And then what? And then, like, you have one of those things, and then what? How much all hava do you got?
Yeah,
like, let's say I have one guy has three of them. Like, is that all? Or does somehow that one all thing, that will give you, like, a big, like, you know, cash it in, all your stuff that you've done until now? Is there a difference between his one thing and the next guy's one thing?
Right.
I know, it makes the whole thing hard to understand. I know. It's very, you know, it's very... It's interesting. It's interesting that this is the only place Ram talks about it. And it seems to be like a game changer.
Right.
So, you know.
And
so
I thought that Ram spoke about in other places that the more...
Yeah, right. The hero of Chachma, so... There's the thing. It says, according to a person's Chachma and his Maisim.
Yeah.
I know. It is seemingly against certain things. But let's at least just try to understand the idea on, you know, here, and then, I don't know. You can think about how it impacts other stuff. You know, certainly seems pretty clear. I mean, I read it. It sounds pretty clear. This is what he's saying. But, you know, let's try to get an idea here and then see if we could, you know, worry about other stuff. Yeah, Ralph, is that a hand? Oh, Ben.
So, he doesn't say there's no mitzvah. He says just insofar as Tazir Olamava. So, maybe we could say that, in order to be tied to Olam Haba, that you need to be involved in something which has the same identity, essentially. I mean, the same makeup as Olam Haba.
Okay.
In other words, Olam Haba is a place where there's only us. You know what I mean? Okay. There's that's it.
Right.
And so even though you could be doing mitzvahs, the only way to actually, like, relate yourself, like, to the entity of Olam Haba, there needs to be an element of only MS in what you're doing. Otherwise, there's no real way to have there be like an overlap.
Okay. Okay, I hear you. I think it could be explained a little bit more.
So,
right. What do you guys think? Is that satisfying? I mean, I think you're onto something, but it begs the question a little bit, like. Yeah.
Oh, well, what's the difference between this question and others? I know we went over it, but just to be like, I'm just getting the same as far as like.
Well, his question, I don't know what his question was. I'm not sure I wasn't out of share. But I just know he was taking it as a given that that's the case. And he was developing on the idea that therefore, what his main point, I think, was is that you shouldn't be working on removing your lola shmas, but you should just learn and move yourself towards Torah, and you naturally develop and become lishma. Not through removing lola shmas; it's just natural. It's like a natural process of a person developing. But because he's using this like as a raya, otherwise you should say, "What do you need millions of mitzvahs? Just work on removing lola shmas." This is kind of brought in as a raya, you know. But he wasn't taking up why this is. You're just kind of taking that as a given.
Why is it that you need to do one mitzvah lishma to be so
right. Yeah.
Or why? Okay, that's the question.
That's my question.
Which is to say, I don't know if Sammy said this before, but which is to say that you wouldn't be zocha if you didn't do one mitzvah lishma.
Yeah. Sounds like what you're saying. There's no mitzvah you did. But now lishma means exclusively lishma.
Right.
With no other motivations. Which you can't really control. That's why it says it's a rare case. You know, it's like, you can't concoct these situations. It just kind of happens, maybe. Yeah. Okay, so I'm thinking like this. And I think it's very a similar answer to another problem in Rambam. Maybe we'll take it up afterwards, but another episode. But the thing I'm thinking is that you can't see a person's nature is like, you know, his emotions are, so to speak, more real than, like, in their face value. They're like more order to attach yourself to truth, to a true idea, the world of ideas, it's, let's say you're doing a mitzvah, which is moved to by your mind and also by your emotions. It's like the emotional satisfaction is in your face, and it becomes pronounced, and you can't push that aside and ignore that, and the experience becomes like an emotionally charged experience, and that, so to speak, blocks you from relating to the underlying sublime abstract value in the action. It is because of the fact that the experience is, you know, the emotions are, it satisfies your emotions, and the satisfaction itself, blinds you from the other aspects of it. Because they impresses itself on you. And then you can't, if the emotions are neutral, then you could tap in and experience the attachment to the truth value of the action. But it's once you cloud the picture with your emotions, so those are more moment on the moment, those are more impressive upon your personality. And you can't you can't forget about them and attach yourself to the true idea. You follow what I mean? Then let me give you the other point, which is a similar idea, which maybe will help out. But is the famous thing is the Rambam talks about it. It's basically the Yisod of the Torah, is like the Yisod of Avodah Zarah. Okay, which it says idolaters. Maybe you did this there as well. Also, I don't know if you guys are in Shiram on whatever night it is, but. Is the original idolater said is that we want to honor, God gave honor to the sun and the moon and the stars, and the king gives honor to his right hand man, so it's honor to the king to honor his mishamshim, his servants. So we're really honoring God by bowing down to the sun and the moon and the stars, because the God gave them honor, so we're giving him honor. Isn't this what a king wants? But the Torah, that's a mistake, and the Torah's against that. But why is that so bad? What's the mistake in that? But I think the idea is because... You guys follow me? Hey, what sounds like your argument in a certain sense? Why can't I worship them, the Torahs? They are God's helpers, and God gave them Kavod. So I'm thinking about God. But I think the thing is that a person's desire for Avodah Zarah is because God is not relatable to on an emotional level. God, you could have a concept, an idea of God, and it's if you relate to him some level with your mind, but your emotions are frustrated with the idea of God. You can't grab hold of him. You can't see him. You can't, imagine him in any way. And the person is looking for that in religion. And that's why all idolaters create human God, and create God with all different emotions and all different types of things, The stars, why do they turn to the stars and the sun and the moon and people and statues and all these different things? Because it's the Torah makes a big demand that says in your worship of God, you cannot satisfy that desire to relate to him in any concrete way. And when a person, if a person were to worship the sun because the sun reminds him of God, like what they said, he's like, the sun is physical and real to you, and you can't help but attaching yourself to the physical real thing, and God is just, you forget about God. It's like the only way you could attach yourself as worship of God is if you totally frustrate that physical, object of worship. Because once you have the physical object of worship and you satisfy that basic instinct which attaches itself to the physical thing, so you can't simultaneously say, oh, but it's because of this sublime abstract idea, which it's too satisfying on an emotional level that it doesn't leave room for your energy to attach to the true idea of God. And the only way to really worship God is if you don't have an object, a physical object to attach yourself to as the object of worship. So it's like although you could in theory say, hey, I'll use these things as a vehicle, but it doesn't work. And the Raya, that's what the Rambam, if you look in the Rambam there, what ended up happening was, sure enough, there was a slippery slope, and before they knew it, they didn't know about God anymore. Because that's what has to happen. Because it's like you're not really... It's a nice theory that I'm just worshiping this thing, and that hooks me into God. But it doesn't work.
The
Torah says that you cannot give that any satisfaction whatsoever. Otherwise, within generations, there's not going to be any idea of God. And that person himself isn't really related to God, you know. And it's like you have to totally. That's what the Torah does in knocking out of Abzar in all its forms is basically frustrates that. It says you can't have any object that attaches your worship to. Any physical thing, any created thing, and you have to totally have the worship of God alone. And the point in both of these things, the parallel of these two things, is that I think the way, because of the fact that your emotions are like very concrete and real, and so far as an activity has an admixture of emotional attachments and ideational attachment, it's like the emotion becomes much more pronounced and you can't truly tap into and be moved by the non-physical abstract component of the action. So that's why it's saying your worship won't be worshiping of God and your mitzvah won't be attaching yourself to the underlying lishma idea, but it will be more primarily attaching yourself to the physical pleasure or whatever, psychological pleasure or whatever it is. And that's not the benefit of the mitzvah. You can't do both. That's my point. It's not like you're attached to both. Because of the intensity of the emotion and the fact that it's more impressive and it's aroused, your instinct is like aroused, it's like you're only attached to that. The other thing kind of falls by the wayside.
So
you're
kind of saying there's no such thing as being a little lishma.
Yeah, right.
Once you get to that low lishma point, it's like very much.
Yeah, right. Because in quality it's so real to you, it's like the little bit becomes, you just jump on it. And then the other thing just pales. It's like it could only exist if it's pure. You know, and once it's like maybe you could think of that, like imagine a certain taste, which is like this sublime flavor, which if you mix it with anything, you just wouldn't taste it, you know? And it's like, it's awesome if you could have it pure. But it's like a very subtle type of a thing. So the moment it would be mixed with anything, the other thing would just be much more, like, impressive on your palate, so you wouldn't be able to touch anything, you know, tap into it. I don't know if there's such a thing like that.
Tofu, like, it takes on the flavor.
Yeah, maybe something like that. But you want to really enjoy tofu, it's got to be pure. You know, you got to come in.
Right.
Yeah?
I'm a big tofu guy.
But yeah, you like it pure. Once you mix it with something, you can't.
Yeah, I'm not saying this, it's better with stuff, but if you want to taste
tofu, you can't do anything else because you're not going to be tasting ketchup or tasting whatever.
Tofu's
tough. It's tough, right?
Huh? Tofu's tough, yeah, I'm going to start to.
Yeah.
I'm just not. I'm having trouble understanding why that satisfies the question. Like, I it brings it out more by the other shot. It seems like you're saying that it's impossible to have a true, complete lishma action. It's impossible to have a complete like relationship with. Fine, that makes sense, but why does that bar you from having Olam Haba? It's just a mixture.
Well, I think the Rambam's idea of Olam Haba is not like God gives you superficially this reward, but the Rambam's idea is that Olam Haba stems from the soul, the personality, the attachment to truth. It's a natural thing. And when you do a mitzvah, or you learn, so that if you do it at the proper level, it's like you are attaching yourself to truth. And that's what gives your soul immortality and allows your soul to continue beyond the physical. So it's like the experience of pure ideas is what attaches your soul to truth, to ideas. And then the experience of the instincts attaches your soul to the instincts, to the physical, and then the physical dies, and then you die, because you're physical. And so far as you're totally physical, you're attached to the physical, so then when your body dies, it's gone. But so far as you're attached to ideas and the truth, those ideas exist beyond the body. So it's the experience which attaches you to ideas, which gives you eternal life. So it's saying, is it, so far as you're involved in this mixed activity, so I'm saying is the ideas become tafel, and therefore you don't become attached to the ideas. You become attached to the physical side benefit, you know.
Yeah. Ask a question. when you mentioned that little different track.
Okay, but you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that like emotionally related to that?
Okay.
So like, let's say like benching or like modem, it's like thanks or like sheva, like that. But like, let's say thanks or. I mean, really, all there is like the abstract, like meisim of God, like what He does. Like, let's say He made it accessible for people to find food, and He created a world in which it's not like extremely challenging to provide for oneself. That's like kind of some ideas of benching, but like, what's the idea of like thanks? Because it seems like thanks is like you recognize that it took some effort for somebody to do something for you, and you're like appreciative of that. So like. Is there an element of that in like Sheva Chedoga, like that, like there's like, I don't mean an element of that, but is there an element of like you emotionally are moved by that, or is it all just like when we say like Hazanasom Kulo V'Tuvo, is the tube just like a way of expressing the fact that food is accessible and that idea is what you should relate to, or like is
acknowledging that God is the source of these things,
right? Or should that move you like, wow, like God is awesome for that, that, you know what I mean?
What are you questioning? Are you, like, is this idolatry? Is this an emotion? Which thing is this relating to?
Whatever.
Okay,
so what's
sort of
the question? Like,
what's the idea of Mahavada?
Yeah, is Mahavada just like a way of relating to those ideas about like God that He.
But I think there is a thing that moves the person is when a person.
Well, is there a benefit in that? Like,
I just think it's natural that a person. Well, I think one benefit is a person should. It's important for a person to not give himself credit of things and to acknowledge God as a source of stuff.
That would be like a false idea.
Yeah, right. So I think that part of Odah is the idea of acknowledging that good which you have is from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's a benefit.
Right.
That's one benefit. It's a major benefit of
Odah. You don't have to call it Tov for that necessarily.
What?
You don't have to call it Tov. It doesn't have to be like a Hodah or a Shadah.
Well, that's part of the idea of Hodah, is you're giving Hodah on the Tov, which you have. You're expressing Hodah L'Hashem Ki Tov, that God's good, that He gives us that. That He makes good available to man, and you're recognizing that the good which you have is not based upon yourself, but is based upon God and His world and His chesed and His, you know. So that's like recognizing where your good is from. And that does move you. I think it moves the person towards God because he realizes that God is tough and that does set up a world in that way, and it allows him to be drawn towards the God because of that.
What's the other option besides being moved?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
It's relating to the abstract idea that it seems that God made a world that food is readily accessible.
Right, but I think that moves you. I mean, you appreciate that. That's unbelievable.
I'm saying,
that's
but is that like a good feeling to have in terms of relationship with God?
I think so, because that's why you're drawn to God, is you're moved to appreciate God's goodness. That creates a kira l'manko. When you appreciate God's goodness, and the fact that God is also chesed to man or whatever, so then it moves you and draws you towards him. Yeah, I don't know. It sounds like you don't think that's from that Shemek's of Odzor or something.
I don't know.
Or you're not sure. I don't know. Emotionalism.
Like, are you thinking the food or something?
I kind of hear what you're saying. I don't have to think about it, but I don't think there's anything wrong. I think that's good. I think that's the person who's naturally drawn towards a source of his stuff.
It doesn't seem like the same, that emotion should really apply in reality. It's like an association to something that doesn't really exist in reality.
Well, it is true, because God did do these actions, and that's part of His nisim, is that why, and therefore you appreciate that. That's something which
you didn't have to, like, sacrifice anything.
Well, it doesn't, I mean, that's just the world He created. I mean, He could have created different worlds. He could have created worlds which are more painful for you, and instead He created this world. So that's something which you appreciate. You say, wow, that's unbelievable. It's something that you have to stand back and appreciate. He set up a world which we have access to that. Didn't have to do that. Yeah.
I don't know. know if we went over this before, but I know Matt was asking a little while ago, like what the difference is between Shevach, Hodah, and Bakasha. Like, they all seem to be sort of like one. How did you phrase the question? It seemed pretty compelling. Like,
I was asking about Sim Shalom in particular.
Sim Shalom. Oh, yeah. Sim Shalom in particular. But they all, like, a lot of them seem to be very, like, Bakasha could be praise, and it could also be like a recognition that Hashem is
okay.
the provider of these things. Right. But it's like, you
know, okay. I hear you. A little bit of a different question, Ralph. Were you, Ben, were you going to ask something on this topic or no?
Totally different topic.
Totally different. Okay, so yeah, then this is close to this topic. So.
Yeah, close competition.
Okay, someone have a question on, we're moving away from the previous thing. Are we all ready for that? Lishma, you had a follow-up related?
But it's not going to be the same question, so it doesn't matter.
Okay, fine. Yeah, so the question is, what's the difference between these different things? I mean, I think that Shevach, I'm just playing. I'm not sure exactly what's bothering you, but I guess I'll try to give you some idea that comes to mind about these two different things, and then we'll see if your question still exists. How about that? So Shevach is just the pure ideas about a Kadosh Baruch Hu. God's all-powerful. God's separate. He's Kadosh. God relates to man. Mashkiach, you know, Chaim Esim, you know, things like that. Okay, just purely expressing realities, ideas about God. You know, the Ma'aseh Hashem, that kind of thing. That we're not asking for anything, we're not looking for anything. Before we start tefillah, we just recognize who God is, so to speak, what He does, what is He, you know, what's our concept of God. Okay?
Yeah.
Then we say, we realize that we as human beings have needs, right? Every human being has needs, and we know God to Shema Tefillah, and we turn to God and ask Him for those needs. But the asking is based upon the fact that He does do these things. So we, in our request, we give Shevach that He does Rofei Kol Am Yisrael. So we ask Him for it, and then we culminate. You do that. So it's like the way we ask is that we're asking God because we realize that He is Rafa Cholim. So implicit in the way we ask for it is we're expressing that He does do that. So there's a Shevach which is involved in it. But what's motivating us to do it is because we're asking for a Bakasha. So we want something, and but the premise of the wanting it is that God does these things, and therefore the in the request is a Shevach that God does it. And presumably that puts us in a better position to actually get it, insofar as we recognize God does it, and we turn to God in that capacity, and we express that God does it, and we give Shevach to Him for doing it. But the motivation of the primary, what am I doing? I'm making a request. It's just a proper way to make a request. You know, but in the Shevach, I'm not making a request. I'm purely just setting the stage. I'm saying, God is a Givor. I'm not asking for anything. I'm just, there's nothing in the Baruch that's asking for anything. You know?
Yeah.
That's a Makasha. Hodah is, I think, we have gotten things in the past. We have a good life. We have the Torah. We have whatever. We have, you know, life. And we're expressing that we're acknowledging that whatever tov we have, whatever good that we have, is not because of ourselves, but is because of God in some way or other. He created the world, He set up a world which is conducive to having a good life, He gave us the Torah, you know. So that's an expression of Hodah, for the fact that He did it. Now, of course, there's like an implicit like Shevach in that God did those things, but it's a Shevach which is particularly tied to reflecting on Tuv that we have and acknowledging that that is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know? Now there's a Shevach, of course, we give Shevach because of that. So Shevach about that, but the activity that we're doing is we're acknowledging. I think as Rabbi once said, old Shir, right? It's because of Rashi, says Modim means, is a Rashi, it says Modim velo Kofrim. Modim doesn't mean thanks, it means acknowledge. Is Moda is the opposite of Kofar. So you admit as opposed to you deny. That didn't mean thanks. Like maybe that's what's bothering you somehow. It's like thanks has some sort of connotation of like that. You did something for you, or I don't know, something like that. But it's more of like, I don't remember exactly what it's, but that's the way he translated modem, is like an acknowledgement. Yeah, right, Vod Elamis, right. So it's like an acknowledgement of the source of the good in your life. You know what I mean? So, but of course, there's an implicit Shabbat in everything.
Yeah, I guess that was the problem. I guess you're saying, like, okay, it's true. There, each one you could find, whatever. Like, I admit that you're this, and then I'm that. Whatever, each thing could
be. The action is different. The action. Maisa Shabbat, Maisa Bakasha, Maisa Adah. Implicit in them, or explicit in them, are elements of Shabbat.
Yeah, I guess it's, like, sort of irrelevant. Also, like, the relevant part is that format. Like, okay, so they're together. Like, do
they
want
to
do
another? No, but it is important to distinguish between why we even call them different, because we do have different categories. So, you know, if they're all just a mishmash of everything, then, you know, why are they even different? But they are three distinct components of tefillah. And the idea is, I think, that we first, you know, turn to God, and we first, maybe start off with Shabbat. Then, once we set that down, then we talk to God and ask of Him, and then we reflect, we're asking of Him, but we're acknowledging the things of the past that we have are also, you know, based upon that. Rashba, there's a, I don't know if Rav Pesach got to it yet, probably not, but you guys go to Rav Pesach on Sunday morning, Jim? So there's a piece of Rashba, he goes through the whole Seder. It's a really good one.
Oh, of all the two?
No, just the idea of Seder, Shabbat. Not of every single bracha, but just the concepts of tefillah. You know.
You say that there's a forgetting who is the Tazmin. Who is he saying that goes through all the
Guzari?
What?
Guzari,
yeah.
Goes through the brachas.
Yeah.
I told you that maybe. He told you that also?
He definitely goes through.
What? He did.
He for sure said. You might also right here. I remember saying. Wait, so it's in the English one?
Yeah. But you have to get there's a fake English and a real English. I think the only yeshiva we have is the real one. But there's like a Mitsudo one is fake. It's like someone annotated it and like reworded it.
Really?
I don't know why or something.
And
then
like they just gave it on a shot.
Yeah, I think he like made it like more mystery. I don't know. It's like it's weird. Something like that. Yeah, it's like a new rendition of the Guzari or something like that. It's just a translation. But nowadays, I think the ones that they make are like the real ones. But the Guzari,
so
the Mitsudo ones are. Yeah.
I love it. Like my shot and Rashi.
I couldn't believe it. It was hard at the time. It was hard to get the real ones.
Oh, really?
But then they made a new publishing of it. And got it there, you know. I remember back in the day when I think when I was in Israel, you'd go to like the bookstores in Israel, try to find the real Guzari, and I'd always say Guzari that you shouldn't have. So I'm like, no, I want the real one, the red cover. They go, what do you mean? This is the real one.
That's good. What do you mean? This is real leather. What are you talking about?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. Good. Next, Ben.
Yeah.
Or Jay.
I wrote
Jay.
So this is follow up using from Pesach's chair. So I asked him the same question, he didn't have an answer.
And what?
He didn't have an answer either. He was thinking about it.
Okay.
Basically, we were talking about the Yigamli Karim, whatever, and that. That the Rambam says that if you know the Yigamli Karim, but not that you learned it whatever, but like you know them, an honest knowledge of the truth of them, so then you get a Schar Umhaba. But how could that be what gives you Umhaba if doing something with Shema is what gives you Umhaba? So it's kind of like which one is it? Which one gets you to Umhaba?
Right.
If you know the Yigamli Karim, that's what makes you a Bnei Yisrael, and if you know them, then you get Schar Umhaba. Just the knowledge of them.
In between that and the other one, which one really gives you that
kind? Right. So the only thing I can think of is that the only way it's possible to actually truly know something is if you only truly know it lishma. But then Rafi asked, "What does that mean?" So I said, "Like the only it's like your knowledge of it is removed from all." Personal aspects or like views of it, you're just seeing the absolute reality, and that leads you to the 13 Ikarim. And when you have absolute reality, you're also doing something with Shema.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a good question. Yeah, that's a problem. Seems like this Rambam, it's kind of the general question, that this Rambam seems to contradict the other Rambams.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. If Pesach quoted me somewhere else in the Rambam, where he says also you get a whole Mabu, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, the Fira of Maisa, the
Mahmoud,
or something like that.
Could it be different methods?
Yeah, well, the way I understood that, the idea of a Klesha Shavu Homaba, just in a general sense, is like there's a different idea. There's like Olam Haba, like of a Yachid. Like the Ram says, for instance, or Chazal say that even a Chassid of Musolam is Olam Haba. You know? It doesn't have to be a Jew as Olam Haba. It goes Olam Haba. Because it's so far as he's attached to the truth. So I think I also wanted to say there's two methods of Olam Haba. There's Olam Haba via the individual's attachment to ideas and to truths. And then there's Olam Haba because you're part of Klal Yisrael. In Klal Yisrael, you partake of eternity, not because you're directly attached to these ideas on like what we were talking about, but because you identify with the nation of the Jewish people, and that there's an eternal existence to the not to the Am. And so far as you live your life as part of that Am, you partake of an eternal, you have something which exists eternally. Like, so I don't know exactly how that works metaphysically, but it's like a different, so it's like, it's the unit of Klal Yisrael has Olam Haba. And so far as you're part of that unit, so you partake of the eternity because you're part of this mission. You know, so it's not because of the ideas that you have. That's like a klisha of Olam Haba, any person. Like, what about these other, you know, okay, I thought you have to be at some super high level, you know? I think that's the approach. I mean, presumably you have to work it out more how it works. But I think you're saying is like there's a basic level of Olam Haba, which is simply because you identify yourself with the ideology of Torah, namely the Yigal Ikaron, that you partake of in eternity through the unit which we call Klal Yisrael. But then there's a higher level where you partake of eternity through your attachment to the ideas per se, not just because you're part of this and part of the group.
So someone who's completely not affiliated, who doesn't know anything about Judaism, he maybe doesn't even know he's Jewish, but still partaking eternity?
No. You need a karma. That's what I'm saying. That's what you need a karma. You have to identify yourself with the idea. That's what you need a karma are. I mean, I don't know if we're based off, I don't know if, maybe say that also, but this is basically the ideology of Torah. These are the basics of the ideology of Torah. And so far as you attach yourself to these 13 things, so then you're basically attached to Klal Yisrael. And you partake of the eternity of Klal Yisrael, right?
So the Shem Mitzvah
is
involved in the 13,
or is it? No, Shem Mitzvahs are different. That's not all. You don't get all of Shem Mitzvahs. No. You have to really be Chassidim Masolam. You have to really be like, I mean, you have to also have Shabbos, presumably, but more than that. You have to really be attached to the ideas. And, like, presumably, like what this Ram was talking about, you know? Like, really, like, a high level of Lashma and that kind of thing. But this Ram's talking about, like, the, so to speak, primary Olam Haba. You know what I mean? The other one is more, like, secondary as being a part of the group. So I think this theory is two different kinds of Olam Haba. This one is a little easier to relate to. The Klal Yisrael one is a little more, because, like, how does it work? You exist as a part of a group, and that's like a little bit kind of complicated about how that would work metaphysically, but you know what I mean?
And you say the two are definitely mutually exclusive, like?
No.
In terms of the 13 and the Lishma, like it can't be maybe set it, like the Rambam kept that in mind and set it up in such a way that
through the 13 economy, you get
have to. The 13 are by necessity. Lishma. The only way to keep it is Lishma.
I don't know.
I
don't know. It's like Klal Yisrael makes it sound like you just have to have a basic knowledge of these things. And, you know, Klal Yisrael Shmoa doesn't sound like the drama. You know, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it to me, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if you could unify them, I understand. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like it to me, but I'm not sure.
So you're essentially just, like, making two different types of Olam Haba?
Yes. Yeah, that's a sneak way of answering your question. Well, I'm saying all homage means you partake of eternal existence. What I'm saying is you can partake of eternal existence as a yachid, or you can partake of eternal existence as being a part of a group which partakes of eternal existence.
Or both.
Yeah, of course, or both, yeah. Right, what I'm saying is like there's a way in, if that's Kalei Shalei Shalei means like you could partake of eternity because you attach yourself to this eternal mission, the group which is involved in a mission, and the mission partakes of eternity.
Isn't that like different though?
Doesn't like
the, they're not you.
Doesn't Klal Yisrael the eternity mean that like, from generation to generation there's like a group of people promoting Yichud Hashem?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying more than that. Yeah, I don't mean that. I mean, that's what I mean metaphysically. I'm not sure exactly what I mean. But what I'm saying is that there is such a thing as the unit of Klal Yisrael.
How do we understand
that? A metaphysical entity called Klal Yisrael. And that you're a part of that. And then you partake of... You exist because you're attached. Part of your identity of yourself is as an element of Klal Yisrael. And therefore you partake of something eternal. Like you partake of something eternal because you're attached to the idea itself, some concept, or because you're attached to a mission. And that mission partakes of eternal reality.
But what would be the experience of that? Like, it would still be a individual experience. Like, there's no way to experience something as like a million people.
Well, so, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, it could be the result is on an individual level, but it's because your attachment, like you're attached to something in a secondary way. So presumably it's a lesser type of an experience, I would think, because you're not attached to the idea directly, but you're, so to speak, you know, participating in as a secondary member of something. I don't know, maybe I can think of an example.
Fall under a category, sort of?
Yeah, right. It's like,
sorry.
It would be like, I don't know, maybe this is a bad example, I don't know. But like, let's say you could say like there's a good of like being an American, and there's like an American way of life, you know, and the pursuit of happiness and whatever, that whole American dream, you know. So you could like be pursuing the American dream and really benefit from being an American, but then you could just be like some illegal immigrant who comes to America and you know, across the border and doesn't really do the American dream, but like you live in America and like you partake of certain benefits of being part of the group of Americans, even though you're not really primarily attached to what it really means to be an American. I don't know.
Right. What about if you take the other side and you pursue that? The pursuit of happiness, right? You pursue the pursuit of happiness, but in India. Are you able to do that? Is that analogous to, like, I don't know, keeping laws?
Yeah, well, that would be like the example of a Chassidei Masola. You know, we could have Olam Haba. You don't have to be part of the group, but you could be involved in the ideas of the group and also have it. But then there's an idea where you could partake of it like in a parenthetic type of a way. So the experience of the benefits of America won't be the same as the guy who's really attached to America in a true way, but he will have certain secondary benefits of it. So, but it's not the same thing as a person who's really a chassid and the person's a high-level guy. But on a basic level, you could partake as being, because you're attached to the group. And this group is founded upon true ideas, and you, so to speak, touch on eternity through your attachment to this group. You know, and that has a benefit to your soul, even after it allows you to have some existence after you die. Albeit not, you know, not in the primary way.
You get that from doing what again?
From the Yom Yikaram, from attached, from being, identifying yourself as part of this mission. And the mission is a mission which is internal, that ties in with the eternal ideas. even though you may not be attached to those ideas in like the Lashma primary way, and you're like a, you know, a personal Chachma, but you're basically, you would associate yourself as being part of this mission.
Versus doing Lashma.
Yeah, right. Versus Lashma and Chachma and real ideas.
But we're saying if a Goy does a mitzvah Lashma, like one of the Shem mitzvahs, it's the same deal?
Well, the Goy says Chassidei Masolam. You know, but I think even the mitzvah Lashma is because you're attached to the ideas, the true ideas, Lashma, for the sake of the truth. So insofar as a guy would do the analogy of the mitzvah Lashma, which is he's attached to the ideas of the Torah, Lashma, then yeah, then that would be like Chassidei Masolam, you know. But he doesn't have that secondary idea. He doesn't have this so to speak, back door. He can't get to Olam Haba through the back door, through being part of a group, because he's not part of the group. So he only has to get it through his involvement in the ideas themselves, this true attachment to the metaphor, to the ideas of the you know. The,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, Rafi.
See, the original, I don't necessarily, I mean, there could be wrong, but it doesn't seem to me that it's like a back door to believe in Adi Mavins, and then those seem to be ideas, and that is part of taking some aspect of
Chachma. Yeah, sure. I don't mean to. I'm just saying, as opposed to the person who's really attached to the ideas directly, you know? Okay. That's different than a guy who's not really attached to the ideas directly, but he just has some basic akara of the only karma. Yeah, it's a level. I'm not saying it's not a level, but it's not the. It's different than a guy who really is attached to truth, you know, experientially to the Chachma. Not everyone invites you and knows you only car is attached to the Chachma of the Torah, and, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just mean it as compared to the other one. It's like an easier way to know the only car than to really be doing Mitzvah Lashma and really partaking of the true Chachma. And of, so for a guy to do it, it's much, much harder.
Right.
You know, because you have to really be like a really high Chassid, Chassidim or so on. But for Klai Yisrael, you don't have to be Chassidei Klai Yisrael, you just be a regular person, a regular Jew. So that's a great benefit to us, that we can partake of it, even though, you know, we don't have none of it.
Like in terms of, relatively, it's much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Klai Yisrael, Klai Yisrael, right. To everyone. And the last year is only the Unicorn, which is not a very steep requirement. You know, it's, I mean, nowadays not many people don't have them, but in theory it's not a very steep requirement for a person to have. But, I mean, if a senior was all to be a chassid, it's like a whole different, you know. So that's, but I think it's saying, means God, through Torah mitzvahs, God enables people to partake of the true primary Olam Haba through having doing mitzvah Lashma. It means that in theory the system of Torah will bring a person towards the higher, the real, intrinsic Olam Haba, not just the basic idea of Klai Yisrael Yishol Chod Olam Haba. You know what I mean? But the mitzvahs, the system isn't designed the person to attach to the Lashma, means the true eternal ideas directly, not just through being associated himself as part of the mission. You know? That's a good question. I think that makes sense, huh? Yeah. Okay, Ben, you have a question? You want to hold it off the next time, or?
I guess I'll hold it off.
You want to ask it, and then we'll,
It's not really, crazy, cliff out of luck question. It was more just, your opinion.
Okay.
I wanted to know, I recently heard about a guy who, the way he decided who he was going to marry, he made a checklist of things he wanted. Wanted to be this, wanted to be that, wanted that, blah, blah, blah. And he made a rubric. And then he chose a girl who met all his criteria. Also after that, I heard someone adamantly disagree with that and say none of that matters. All that matters is you have to fall in love. And who cares? You know what I mean? I want to know what, which of these, perspectives do you agree with more?
Mm-hmm. And how did you do it? Did you think a rubric?
No.
Not quite.
Um,
no,
intuitive answer is something in between those two.
Yeah, I was guessing.
You know, it just seems like, you know, this is too extreme. They're too extreme, you know. I mean, I don't think a rubric seems to me a little bit much. I suppose only you can know yourself that well to be able to have a rubric. And, you know, I don't know what was on the rubric, like emotional things or like values.
I think it was like just qualities, you know what I mean?
Let's say one of them, like, she's talkative or something like that, or she's like, you know,
I need to get more details about the
blue eyes or something like that.
I'm not sure how specific it got, but I'm assuming it was stuff like, you know, what I mean? Like, there's probably, like, you probably had it classified into sections, like, in terms of just
personality.
Physical. And the personality.
I'm saying, like, I think that stuff, you could think that you want a girl who's talkative, and then you could end up liking a girl who's not. Like, how do you know yourself that well that you're going to be able to... Like, I think a lot of people, you set up these rubrics, and then you end up never getting married, because, you know, you have this idea of what you're going to like, but it's very hard to predict these things.
Right.
So if they're like philosophical-like values, then it's one thing, but, like, on an emotional level, I don't think... Like, if you fall for the girl and you really love her, then who really cares if she happens to fit into your checklist? Bottom line is, you don't care.
Right.
Either you're attracted to her and you love her and you want to be with her, or you don't. You know, unless there's a philosophical thing. See, that's a different thing, like value judgments. But in terms of, like, all those psychological things, I don't see the value of... I mean, look, unless you want to decide who you're going to go out with, then you want to tell Shadchan who to set you up with or whatever, but... Like, to say that I'm gonna love this girl, I want to be with her, but since she doesn't meet this criteria, which I thought I needed before I started dating this girl, like, what's the point of that? Unless you're saying it's because philosophically I don't want to be married to a girl who believes that God is physical or something like that, or who's, you know, talks Lashon Hara all the time, or I don't know, you know what I mean? But I just think, like, I kind of hear the idea of having in advance, you don't want to get blinded by your love. I think that idea of just like, who do you fall in love and that's it. I don't care if she's a guy. You know, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you obviously have to have some filter with your mind, is that you're not going to just marry anyone you fall in love with. So you have to have some sort of idea of what you're looking for. But if you feel like you're going to be blinded and you have that tendency, maybe it's worth having some idea in advance of what kind of thing you're looking for. But assuming you're normal, I don't see why you can't just have some general idea and try to use your judgment as you know.
But you hold that it is primarily an emotional endeavor. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not like, you know what I mean? You have to try to qualify her on like a objective scale. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I mean, on some level, I don't mean totally. I mean, there is an idea of, like, she's a good person. And, you know, you feel you can live your life with her and you could pursue whatever you want to do and she'll be a partner and pursue it, you know? But, I don't know. I just think it's, like, it's oversimplifying things by making rubrics or things like that, you know? So people are more complicated than that and it just doesn't really work.
That's like rational emotion.
The thing is, like, the idea
way
of spending my life with anyone is extremely scary for me. I don't know why. Like, I thought I was thinking about this. Like, someone said to me that their dad said to them, like, the way you're going to know is, like, you think about it, like, if you're getting willing to spend every day of your life in the next 50 years with this person, then I was like, I don't want to spend the next 50 years with that.
There's all kinds of stuff here.
Like, what you're saying?
It's a little scary.
No, it's not like they'll tell you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everyone has their own thing, like,
you'll know the second it happens. Like.
Right.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Like,
it's
whoa.
No, I'm saying it doesn't sound like, not that I have like some like thing against being like sexually with one girl. That's not what I mean.
Right.
I mean, like, in terms of like, I don't know. It's just outside of my realm. Like, it doesn't. I don't think about it like that.
Right.
You know, to think about that's like, whoa, that's like pretty
cool. I know. I don't know. I just think, I wouldn't worry be scared by this stuff. You need to go out with a girl if you like her. You know, unless you have an issue. I don't know. Maybe you have a problem. No, I mean, this is the thing.
No,
it's like, you know. Like,
no, I don't mean like your parents.
Or,
I don't mean that kind of thing. I mean, like, it could be that I have that.
I don't think so. It just, I understand. Like, people make it sound like this whole sentence.
Rest
or
your life.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by it.
No, I mean, there are people who have issues,
but
it doesn't sound like it. It just sounds like people are making it sound like, I think you just want to be with someone, like, whatever. It's just like, look, you have friends that you're happy to see every day and hang out with them. Like,
yeah,
you know, they make it like, okay. Put in your hour now, you know, but like you're good friends. I'm sure you're happy. You know, you don't not want to see them today because I saw you yesterday. Like,
no, that's not like that. Yeah,
it's not like
but
that.
If I also were to think, I guess I also want to think like you have to see. Anything, like, for the rest of my life, I'm
yeah. Yeah, right. Because you want to. Like, you live your life with people, you know? That's kind of the way things are.
That's funny. Because you think it's, like, it's against your will. Like, you're not allowed to go to the person. But you realize you want to see the better person after a while. So
yeah, right. It's just the way it is. And you build your life with the person.
It's not a command. It's like, you're going to want
it. But. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think it's like, I mean, I think obviously, I just think things are, life is more complex than these types of things, and I think you have to trust yourself a little bit to be able to judge about on the fly, because every girl is different, and you never know what, you know, no one fits into molds exactly.
Right.
You're not marrying a mold, you're marrying a person, so I think you have to kind of assess, you know. I mean, of course, you have to, you know, unless you think you're totally being blown away by some girl who's, you know, totally blinded, but I think you have a certain sense of, you know, what you value, who you are and what you're looking for in life, and the girl should be able to, you know, be a partner and be able to pursue the life that you want to pursue. And if the love or, you know, emotionally be, you know, drawn to her, attached to her, you know, enjoy being with her, and think she's appropriate to be able to pursue your life, you know.
Right, so like there's like a lot of, you know, maybe some intangibles, you know what I mean?
Intangibles, yeah. I think it's very intangible. I don't think it's like...
You can't really put your finger on exactly why, you know...
Yeah, right. What exactly about this girl is like, what, you know... Yeah, it's like so... Psychology is so complex and so, like, undefinable in that type of a way, you know? I think it's, like, superficial to make these... You know, you could probably make some... Well, she has these six qualities, that's what I love about her, but... Sure, you can find someone else who has the same six qualities and you wouldn't really join the front door, you know? It's like, people are just so complex, and your psyche is so complex, and you're probably not even figuring out. You need some, like, real deep analysis to figure out what really attracts you to a person, you know? Like, I kind of hear, like, on an intellectual level, if you think, like, you want to learn, and you want a girl who's, you know, be chilled out and, like, not on top of you all the time, and, you know, demanding you to be with her every single second. You know, like certain like objective things, I could see a checklist of things that you don't want a girl to be overly attached to the materialism because you don't want to have to make millions and millions of dollars. You don't be able to, you know, I don't know. Like there's certain like objective things which you could kind of, you know, but that's more in terms of the life you want to live. You want to live a life where you're going to have, you know, centered around Torah, and you want a girl, you know, where you want a girl who's going to be who's like caring. You know, I'm a vegan mother, or I don't know, so, you know, certain like general things like that. I could, but that's like more rational things, though. What do you think should be good? But in terms of the psychological stuff, everything which comes into like psychological things, I think if you're attracted to her and you want to be with her, then she fits the bill, and if you're not, then who cares if she fits the checklist? Almost like I can imagine that guy marrying the girl who fits his checklist but getting divorced in like a few months. Because he doesn't love her, and he, you know, it just like, it turns out she fits everything on the checklist, but he doesn't even like being with her. Well, look, she hit the checklist, so that's it, we're getting married.
Emotionally,
you know, it's like, he finally gets the last thing on the checklist. He says, yeah, let's get married, you know? And he never, like, even enjoys being with her.
At least the emotional guy, he gets to wait till his emotions wear off.
Like, yeah, right, yeah, 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 right. Yeah, I mean, that's the, like, there's the emotions of, like, short-term, you know, you fall for a girl because of, like, superficial stuff, and, you know, like... Like, yeah, that's, like, I guess you have to be wary about that, but you have to know if that's your tendency, and if that's, like, you know, like, if she really has a girl of substance, she's a girl of substance, and you could really have some sort of a real relationship with her, it's not just because she's the most beautiful girl out there, you know, then I think that, I guess, yeah, I think you have to judge that. You have to be able to just summon it, as hard as it is, but, like, before you fall for her totally. Be able to know whether you're really attached to her, you know. I guess the good friends maybe could tell you that you're making a mistake here, she's really not for you, and she was falling for her because of what happened.
When you say back, nah, you don't know what
she's
doing. Yeah.
She's a real quality girl.
I almost got in a bad situation with that a few days ago. I was talking to a Muslim girl.
Nah.
At the King's College Hill. And then, like, afterwards I was like, wait a minute, like...
I'm in the wrong hill.
What? Yeah, it had a little like...
Oh,
yeah,
the hell is right across from
the... The dominating place for the Muslims is right across the way.
Oh, the Sunni
Yeah.
sporadic rest.
Like down from
oh, yeah, I wash my feet, I like, you know,
yeah. Thing. Like,
something is not right here.
You see, you have muscles. I see muscles washing their feet in the bathroom. So
they have a thing.
But they have a thing
there.
Like,
they have a set of.
What do they do? Do they take their foot and they're like?
Yeah, it's crazy.
No way.
Yeah, they're like balancing with that on top of their sneaker. You know, if you don't want to touch the thing. Yeah, no, really.
That's where yoga comes from.
Why don't they just like take the toilet and flush their foot in?
No, they don't do that. But I see, it's like they stand on top of their thing, their sock on top of their sneaker on top of their thing, and like. Balancing and like, you know. Sometimes I go like.
And six, they do it 6 times a day. It's 12 times a day because 2 feet.
Yeah.
It's like, takes a lot of time.
And what are the rules? Like, do they have to be clean completely? Like, they can't walk on the floor?